אתם עם SBS בעברית. We are now joined by Dr. Ran Porat, the lecturer on Israel and the Middle East at Melbourne Monash University. Hi Ran.
Hi Amit.
From time to time we speak to you about Israelis in Australia, the Middle East, Israel, and today about the Israel-Iran conflict. Few days ago, you published an article on the Monash University website where you try to explain more about the current conflict, its origins, and what could happen next, especially now when tensions between Israel and Iran reach new heights. Where do we start?
So the years-long tensions between these two countries originate from the 1979 Shiite revolution in Iran when the Shah was deposed. And ever since then, there's been lots of tit-for-tat attacks and counter-attacks. But what happened is that over the last few weeks, specifically since April 1st, the tensions reached new heights because Israel attacked a building inside the Syrian capital in Damascus. And as a result, a senior IRGC, the Iranian or the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, a senior general, his name was Mohammad Reza Zahedi, along with other officers and some terror operatives were all killed in that attack on April 1st. Now, this was a major blow for the Iranians. Zahedi was in charge of the Quds force, which is like their elite force in Syria and Lebanon, was in charge of arming the proxies of Iran in the region, and also possibly had some sort of role in the October 7th attack, and it's unclear. In any case, so he was a senior figure, but in addition, the Iranians claimed that he was holding that meeting in a diplomatic building, a building protected by international law because it's close to the Iran's consulate in Damascus. Mm-hmm. Of course, we know that that argument is shaky, to say the least. In any case, what happened is that during his funeral, even before that, the Iranians were promised over and over again revenge for the killing of their previous people, such as General Qasem Soleimani, who was eliminated by the Americans in January 2020 with the help of the Israelis. So they have a long list of people that were eliminated and attacks on their own soil by Israeli weapons, allegedly. We don't know. They have to at least come clean, at least for once say or prove that they're not just talking. So all these promises for revenge, they spiral into extremism. And the regime felt that they had to draw a line in the sand and do something extraordinary this time to send a message and prove to themselves, I think, more than anybody else that they can.
But they do sending messages all the time. They're shooting from Syria, Lebanon, even Yemen. They have proxies almost everywhere in the Middle East.
And that's a tactic for many years, to avoid direct conflict with the U.S. specifically and with Israel and other allies, because they consider their sort of their soft belly being Iran itself. So this is called, the Shiite Crescent or the Ring of Fire around Israel. Sure, they have they're nurtured lots of proxies, Hezbollah, the Shiite militias in Iraq, the Houthi rebels and others. I guess they sort of thought that this attack needs a strategic response. It's going to be a bit more dramatic. Mm.
But by directly firing missiles from Iran, didn't they know it is something that would have a negative impact on their country? I mean, were they even aware that this is crossing the line?
I think deep down inside their hearts, they knew that the attack that they're going to launch would be destined to fail, but they didn't expect the colossal fail that eventually happened. So optimistically, they thought that they had enough information and enough preparation. These are attacks that take a while to prepare, to launch a coordinated attack of many loitering weapons, many weapons that are flying in the sky in different speeds, different heights, different sizes. 60 tons of explosives on them. That's an unbelievable amount. It's actually one of the biggest assaults in modern history. Mm. One night.
Is this really the first time in history that one country is firing hundreds of missiles towards another country? and almost 99% of the missiles were shut down by a defense system.
It's Star Wars material. They were shooting down drones and cruise missiles and ballistic missiles like you see in those old Atari games, right? Space Invaders. Looks like something like that.
Yeah.
Airplanes, Israeli, US, UK, France, French airplanes. The Jordanians were really brave and proven their might and importance by shooting down a lot of these drones. And the information, the intelligence given to the coalition of anti-Iran states in the Middle East by Saudi Arabia and the UAE is gold, more way above the tactical value it had at the moment of detecting and taking down the drones. It's proof on which side they are and where they should be and what they think about the Iranian threat and how valuable the Israeli weapon, the multi-layer defense systems, Iron Dome, David Sling, Arrow, and the U.S.-made Patriot. All of these were shooting down the Iranian weapons like it was popcorn.
Yeah, and I guess this type of assault was actually a good thing for Israel, as for the first time ever, they could actually test their defensive system, and it's proven to be working.
It was a major test. Because the fear was that a swarm of these weapons, and that's an Iranian tactic, a classic one, a swarm of weapons will be able to effectively penetrate a lot of Israel's defenses. But the attack has proven not only the vitality of the regional structure to hold off such attacks, but also the accuracy of the weapons, the efficiency of these weapons. I'll just put an asterisk there, because these weapons were fired from afar, from Iranian soil, directly at Israel. It takes anywhere between a few hours to 12 minutes if you're a ballistic missile, or a few hours if you're a drone. But if a swarm of such drones, let's say, is fired at Israel or launched at Israel from Syria or Lebanon, it's a different story. The time you have to actually detect and intercept them will be much shorter. So it is a major achievement. I think the Israeli arms, the weapons industry will be fending off people at the door for looking for to buy these weapons, these defense systems. But yet it was a different challenge than what might Israel face if Lebanon, let's say, or Hezbollah joins the war.
Ran, what are the consequences now? And, you know, what does it mean, the attack and also Israel responding?
So Israel chose to respond very moderately and very strategically and very smartly at a very sort of confined, contained attack with a few drones and a missile that hit directly at the most sophisticated Russian-made, Iranian-used anti-aircraft battery stationed at Isfahan to show that if at will Israel can actually shoot and bomb and precision attack the nuclear facilities, Iran's nuclear facilities. So it was very strategically smart because of the pressure not to escalate the situation, the pressure coming from the U.S. and from the EU. And also it sent a message and allowed Iran to remain what we call under the plausible deniability threshold, saying something like, oh, this attack had failed, although they absolutely know it was a major success, even if it was just one or two missiles that penetrated the Iranian airspace like there was no one there. So escalation was avoided. Iran was, everybody understands outside Iran that it was another humiliation for Iran. More sanctions were applied on Iran, and for a few days, nobody was talking about Gaza or what Israel should do or not do in Rafah. So a huge mistake, a huge Iranian mistake. At the same time, the Iranians are not stupid. I think they will learn from their mistakes. And who knows how, if a second attack or a future attack, how it would look. Maybe it will be different and they will be smarter. Who knows?
So in your opinion, it's not the end. It's just sort of the beginning of further escalation between Israel and Iran.
Escalation in the sense that Israel could not accept the reality of a nuclear weapon Iran is on the cards. So it's in many respects unavoidable. Iran is edging very close to becoming what we call a nuclear threshold state, which is a state with the capability to create enough, to produce enough fissile material for the warhead of an atomic weapon. We've seen that their missiles are not impressive. 50% of them fell on the way to Israel, but they do have the allegedly the capability to mount these warheads when they are developed, and they are not developed yet, on missiles to launch towards Israel and other states in the region. So escalation, in the sense that Israel will not tolerate that development towards nuclear weapon in Iran, is definitely possible and even likely.
And I would like to remind our listeners that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had his UN speech in 2012, where he drew a red line on a cartoon bomb, showing what stages Iran needs to go through to get to a nuclear weapon. And that was 12 years ago.
Iran has breached many times over that red line that Netanyahu drew in the UN with the picture of a bomb, right? It's got highly enriched uranium that can be enriched very quickly to nuclear or military-grade weapons, what we call uranium. So, yes, it's very close. How do you stop a country that wants a nuclear weapon? That's a huge question. It happened at least once in the South African case. Sanctions is what led the fall of the regime there and change of government. But South Africa is not a good case to talk about in the Israeli context, right? It's very hard to stop a country with all their resources if they are adamant on going all the way and getting a nuclear weapon. Very difficult.
I'll guess we'll have to wait and see how things develop there in the Middle East between Iran and Israel. Dr. Ran Porat, the lecturer on Israel and the Middle East at Melbourne Monash University. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Amit.
רוצים לשמוע עוד סיפורים? האזינו דרך האפל פודקאסט, גוגל פודקאסט, ספוטיפיי, או בכל מקום אחר בו ניתן להאזין לפודקאסטים.